Hi, everybody. How are you? Please sit down. You've had a long day. I know you've had two inconsequential speakers so far. I do what vice presidents do. I'm the cleanup act, Father. I'm delighted to be here with you. I'm here only because Dr. Jill Biden, I'm her husband, is unavailable. She's teaching as I speak today. I just want you to know that my wife, Jill, has been a community college teacher now for some time. She literally is in the classroom today, and that's why all you should be. Where the hell are you? What are you doing here? You should be out there teaching. I don't know. I'm only kidding. The press takes me seriously all the time. Look, I know you have had a full day, I don't want to make it too much longer for you. But as we conclude this day of action, I'd like to mention a few things to put all this, at least from my perspective, in a larger context. First, I'm not being solicitous when I say thank you all for all that you have committed to do and all that you've already done. As all of you know, the college process is complicated. It's a veritable labyrinth, it's expensive, and it's highly competitive. Any of you with young children who have gone through the process know it generates a great deal of pressure as well on your students, on your children. I've learned two things in the process. One, if those of you who have children but not of college age yet, don't make the mistake I made. Don't say, whatever university you get into, I'll help you get there. Don't do that. I'm listed as the poorest man in Congress. That's part of the reason. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. But at any rate. On the one hand, my children had a real advantage. I had a considerable amount of experience by the time they were applying to colleges. They went to very competitive high schools and had very good grades. And they had a mother who was a college professor and knew what was expected. She knew the process. And in turn, we were able to be of considerable assistance. Between us, their guidance counselors, the teachers they had, they were prepared for their college board exams. They were prepared for the process. They were given plenty of notification from the time they were sophomores, the school they attended. They were prepared for what was coming. So they knew what courses to take, and they knew what they had to do in order to have a chance. They had counselors to direct them to the colleges within their range. I remember, like all of you probably do with your children, pick three reaches, three that are solid, and three you're absolutely certain of. That all by itself, and all kidding aside, we all know it is an expensive process. Just that. But a significant number of students are like Jill and I were when we were raised. We were raised by well-read parents, none of whom went to college, although Jill's dad went to a business school. We knew, our parents knew, how vitally important it was for us to get a college education, and maybe a graduate degree. And in both our cases, we were the oldest. She, one of five daughters, me, one of four children. And our parents, though, had never navigated the difficult process. As a matter of fact, we both had good grades, and the only reason I got scholarships to law school is I take those standardized tests pretty well. I don't do as well as the ones I get graded on, but I took those pretty well. But all kidding aside, we intuitively knew that we could reach, because we had parents, we had a circumstance where we knew we could reach. We were encouraged to do that. We didn't quite know how, though. My father was, as I said, my father was a graceful, well-read man. My father was a proud man, but he had never gone to college, his greatest regret. In a sense, I think he was intimidated by the realization there wasn't much he could do. He didn't know how to help me. My father, I was a relatively good athlete in school, so I got a chance to go on a lot of college campuses. The school's looking at me. My father would never come. And my father was incredibly proud of me. From the time I can remember, my father would say, and I never understood when I was a little kid, you're going to be a college man. And I'd say, Dad, why is that so important? And they said, they can never take it from you. So for my father, it was a big deal. Yet, it was a surprise. They never went on these college visits with me. It wasn't until I got a little older that I realized the man of pride and dignity was, he didn't know what to do, what to tell me, what to say. As a matter of fact, I don't think my father stepped foot on the campus until I went to college, and it was only in my second semester. That's where a significant number of young, qualified, bright students find themselves today. Most don't even know what they don't know. But that's where you all come in. That's why I'm here to thank you. Because making the commitment for them to, quote, I had a great friend who was a great basketball player when I was in school. He played for Providence College with Walker and Reardon. They both played in the pros. He was a great, great athlete, died young. He wasn't the brightest academic candle on the table. He was a really wise fellow. And he used to say, Joe, you got to know how to know. Think about that. You've got to know how to know. I can take the brightest young or old person to the Library of Congress, and if they don't know how to access the stacks, they don't know, how to find out how to know. But what you're doing, which I think is most important, I doubt whether it's been spoken to, is you're helping an awful lot of kids like I was, but in much more difficult circumstances and with more capability than I had, to recognize sooner than later the capacity they possess. You know, 2 years ago at the convention, Michelle and Barack and Jill and I were standing waiting to go out to be introduced. It's a true story. And you got to see Michelle. She is an incredible, incredible First Lady, an incredible mother, and an incredible friend, as is the President. Matter of fact, one of the great byproducts, excuse me, we used to say in the Senate, a point of personal privilege, their two daughters and two of my granddaughters, each other's best friend. They vacation together, they spend time together. I told my granddaughter last year, we're going to 10 o'clock Mass. She said, Pop, I can't. I said, whoa, this is your grandfather. You're going to 10 o'clock Mass. She said, I can't. She said, the President's picking me up in 5 minutes. Well, what am I going to say? Except the good news, I had one son who went to Georgetown. I said, they got a 7 o'clock Mass at Georgetown. We're going to 7. But anyway, all kidding aside, I forget whether it was Michelle or Jill who said it, but we're standing there waiting. And I think it was Michelle, but I'm not certain of that. One turned to all of us and said, you know, none of us would be standing here today were it not for the help we got to get to college and get through college. I'm Vice President of the United States. He is President of the United States. We would not have made it. I don't care how bright you are, and I've not met anybody brighter than the President, without somebody helping them find the way. But for financial assistance, none of us would be standing here today, among the four of us. So again, thank you for the commitment you're making today. Universities and school districts coming together to offer high school students college-level courses, to bring talented, underserved high school students to college campuses so they can not only see what's available and learn, but also so they can get a sense of what they're capable of doing. just what they're capable of. If they don't see it, they don't taste it, they don't feel it. My son Hunter is a very, very bright young man. He's a grown man now with three beautiful daughters. And I remember when he got into Yale Law School, he said, "Dad, you know, 69 of my class already have their PhDs. This is going to be hard." He went to a good school. He went to Georgetown before that. I remember in the moot court competition, after it was over, he came out. He went to a phone booth. I know where the phone booth is. And he's whispering to me. He said, "Dad, I won." And then he said, "Dad, you know, I'm smarter than a lot of these guys." But think about what that says, even coming from the family of a guy who was a United States senator all those years, when he had a really good education. It's about exposure. So I think the most valuable part of these talented kids being able to be on a campus is just being on a campus. Just saying, "I can do this. I'm a smart ass. I'm as capable." No, I'm serious. I think sometimes we forget. Foundations, school district, colleges, committing to increasing number of skilled college advisors. So, and I emphasize the word skilled. So more high school students and equally important, more families can understand earlier the process, the avenues available for financial aid for their dreams. You all, not all, but many of you are educators. You know, one of the hardest things is families who've never had an opportunity to go to college, they can't fathom how they could possibly find the money to get their child there. So therefore, they don't build in the dream. Not all, but many do not build in the dream because how can I do this? My argument is we should be counseling in grade schools parents about the access for their children to get to college. I mean it. I can remember my dad. As I said, my dad was a graceful man. My dad, we weren't poor. We were a typical middle-class family, a three-bedroom house, four kids, and a relative always living with us. I mean, when my grandmom died, my grandpa moved in. You know, that was the way it was in my home. And it was wonderful for the children. I wonder how my parents did it, but it was wonderful for my children. But I had a great advantage in high school. My dad managed an automobile agency. He didn't own it, he managed it. Now, why that's important, so all you guys immediately understood, you women won't understand. It meant I got to drive a new car to the prom. No, you think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding. And so I remember my senior year after a baseball game, I went to a school in a little steel town, a place called Archmere Academy, a Catholic prep school. And after the game, I jumped in my 51 Plymouth and drove to Newark, Delaware, where the university is. And it's about a 30-minute drive. So I could pick up the car my dad was going to lend me that night. So I pull my car in the spot I usually pull it in. And I hope you don't mind my being this colloquial, but I think it's important to understand the emotions of ordinary, good, decent people with capacity. And I pulled in. I still had my baseball uniform on. I had taken my spikes off, and I ran into the showroom. And Mary was my dad's person who ran the operation for him. And I said, "Mary, where's Dad?" And this is a God's true story. She said, "Honey, he's out by the service department in the driveway there." And I walked out, and my dad, impeccably dressed, was walking back and forth, and I looked at him and said, "Oh, Joey, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry, honey." And I thought something happened to my mom or my sister or something happened. And he said, "Joey, I went to the Farmers Bank." That was the state bank that financed a lot of the loans for the car company he ran, the car dealership. Said, "I went to Charlie Delcher, the guy who did the loans, and I asked Charlie, could I get a loan to help you get to college?" I'd gotten into a couple really expensive schools, but they were grand in aid, like no football scholarships like others. And even with the grant in aid, I didn't have enough to make it to get tuition. And he said, "I went and I asked for a loan, and they won't lend me the money, honey. I'm so ashamed. I am so ashamed." It's not just a kid who's talented that gets hurt when they don't have the opportunity. It's parents, decent, hardworking people, because all of you know the most helpless feeling for a mother or father is to look at their child with capacity and know there's nothing they can do to help. Your commitment to use data and technology to improve college graduation rates, to better identify, provide help for students who are otherwise likely to find access for financing for them. You're also making it easier for community colleges, students to transition to four-year schools without losing a step. My wife, as I said, has been a community college professor for some time now. She has an expression. She said they're the best-kept secret in America. And states are starting to figure it out. But having counselors at the front end, when a child or not all the average age of my wife's students is 29 years of age, and they come in to say, these are the courses if you take that are directly transferable to the state university, so they don't waste time and effort taking courses that aren't transferable. Helping them acquire access to a four-year degree quicker and cheaper than otherwise would be the case. It matters, the advice that is given. And I want to thank you for exposing my wife's little secret, that they're the best-kept secret. I could go on. I could go on because I'm accused of being too passionate about this overall subject, but you heard from the President and the First Lady, and I think one of the finest secretaries of education that we've ever had, and I've been here for a long time, Arne Duncan. They covered much of the territory that I could go on to cover. But I want to move to two larger points I think are important to make, and I've not often made. First, this just might be the middle-class part of me, but I worry that over the last 10 years, the direction we're going, we may end up with a two-tiered college system in America. One where the most elite universities are limited to those who are truly exceptional intellectually, regardless of their income, and are able to get scholarships to go, or have significant resources. I look back, my children, and I was making a good salary, $42,000 a year as a senator when it started. I had, at the same time, one son at Penn, one son at Georgetown, a daughter at Tulane, then Syracuse, Yale, and Penn Graduate School. All kidding aside, fortunately, it was when the real estate market was in great shape and my house kept going up in value, I could borrow against it. But what do people do today? What do people do today? My staff, all bright, young men and women, like Ida, all went to great universities. When I start talking about the middle class being in the squeeze, the middle class is really getting hurt. If you're a mother and father with an income of $100,000 or $90,000, it's virtually impossible to go to all but a few of the top 20 or 30 or 40 universities in America. I know you know the university professors. No, you may have forgotten, but it's about $50,000 a year. That's after taxes. Now, if you have a child who gets 2,400 in the boards and ranks 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 in their class and is lucky, or if you pick university like Harvard or Penn or several others who, no matter what your financial circumstance, if you get in, they will pay the difference. It works. But if you don't, how do you do it? How do you do it? How does it happen? You know, I think the greatest equalizer, societal equalizer in American history, one of them, was the GI Bill after World War II. Because what all of a sudden happened? Irish Catholic soldiers coming back from my hometown of Scranton, Pennsylvania, could all of a sudden they could go to Harvard. They could pay the tuition, the GI Bill. They could go to the University of Chicago. They could go to Stanford. They could go to whatever. I don't want to leave great universities out. Never able to do that before. If you notice, that's when the big change started to occur. What is that today? What do we do? It was good for them. It was good for the universities. It was good for the country. So first, it seems to me, and you're going to be angry with me, you college presidents, you got to do something about escalating costs. No. I understand the problem. And I'm not talking about salaries. I'm talking about spending another $180,000 putting new boxes up at the football stadium. Now, the president's much more polite than I am. But all kidding aside, you got to do something. Healthcare costs only went up 3.9% this year, the lowest ever. You guys are still way, 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 way ahead of the curve in the wrong direction. It seems to me you have an obligation to every student out there. On another occasion, I'd like to speak to you more about this. If I announce what I'd speak to you about, you probably won't show up, but I'd like to talk to you about it. But the second broader point is that the states and federal government have an obligation to help these middle-class families and who are unable to find access to those great universities. And by the way, I went to a truly great university. I went to the University of Delaware. But all kidding aside, it doesn't mean you can't get the same education, the same intellectual content, but it does create other open doors. I kid my children, you're not going to like my saying this, those of you who went to Harvard and Yale and other schools like that. The most significant thing you got is your roommate. You know I'm telling the truth. States have cut back drastically on aid to public universities. And those who have a different view from me, and the president as well, have tried to cut back on what we consider some real accomplishments we've made in the last 6 years. A $2,500 tax credit off your bottom line, helping millions of families keep their children in college, period. Any college, period. Keeping student loan rates down, not escalating. Loan repayment schedules that give students like my daughter an opportunity to get a undergraduate degree at Tulane and a graduate degree at the University of Pennsylvania in social work and still be able to choose social work. And not doing away with the increase we have provided for in Pell Grants, putting 3 million more kids in school in families with incomes roughly $60,000 or less. But the states have to get back in the business of supporting those state universities like they used to. And you all can help because I know you're making the case. You make the case all the time. But folks, not every student, even those who qualify to go to college, choose to attend a four-year college. But nonetheless, they deserve a decent opportunity to make a good living and live a middle-class life and to get the opportunity they need from some higher education or training. Because we know that 6 out of 10 jobs in this next decade are going to require training beyond a high school degree. It can be an apprenticeship, it can be a certificate, it can be a 2-year program, a 4-year program, a graduate degree, a PhD. The question is, how do we provide for those other opportunities as well? It was toward that end that the president of the State of the Union last year asked me to come up with a game plan to help hardworking Americans get the training they need for good and decent jobs, many of which exist right now and are going unfilled for lack of skill. After 6 months of intensive review, meeting with hundreds of educators, labor unions, business leaders, CEOs, elected officials, we put together a report, and if you haven't seen it, I'd respectfully suggest just let us know. We'll send you a copy of it. We put together a roadmap as to how we could have what America needs. And what America needs is, in order to continue to lead the world economically in the 21st century, is not only the best educated population in the world, but also the most skilled workforce in the world. Because the opportunities exist, and they have great potential to grow. Manufacturing and other enterprises are coming back to the United States. They're coming back for many reasons. We have the lowest energy costs in the world. We have a court system that respects intellectual property, where you can adjudicate your differences. I could go on. But don't take my word for it. A.T. Kearney has been doing a survey for the past 30-some years. They asked the, I think it's 400 leading industrialists in the world every year, what is the best place in the world to invest? And this year, once again, but by a margin larger than any time in the history of the survey, they said the United States of America, in all sectors, from IT to manufacturing to the service economy, in every sector. An outfit called the Boston Consulting Group been doing a survey, I think it's 16, 17 years. They survey American chief executives with operations in China every year, and as I think it, the last report came out in March. It's usually in the late winter, early spring. And they asked the question, what are your plans for next year? This year, 54% of American companies invested in China say they plan on moving production home. That means opportunity. That means jobs. But in order to continue to grow this economy and provide good-paying jobs, we need to do two things. We need to have the most advanced infrastructure in the world. And right now, our transportation infrastructure, for example, ranks 28th in the world. That's for another speech and another time. But we need also the most skilled workforce in the world, technically skilled workforce in the world, with an emphasis on science, technology, engineering, math, computer coding. In fact, the President's Council on Economic Advisors in Science and Technology estimated the U.S. will need 1 million additional college graduates in science, technology, engineering, and math from both 2- and 4-year colleges by the year 2022 just to keep pace. Also consider the growing industries, information technology. We will need 1,300,000 new IT jobs by 2022. Additional jobs. The folks who develop the software make more than $80,000 a year. They typically need a bachelor's degree, but the folks who maintain the computer networks make an average of $59,000 a year with an associate's degree. You can raise a family on that. Healthcare. We need another 64,000 dental hygienists in the next 10 years. Average salary, $70,000 a year. They typically need an associate's degree. Many community colleges offer this. We need almost 600,000 additional registered nurses over the same period. They make today $65,000 to $75,000 a year, typically needing a bachelor's degree. Advanced manufacturing. There are 100,000 jobs going unfilled in America today. Some require a bachelor's degree, but most require a 2-year degree or less. Many of them is a 3-month training program. I could go through examples, which I will not take the time now, but for example, there was a major manufacturer, just one, major manufacturing outfit making photovoltaic shingles. They found out they don't have anybody who knows how to run a photovoltaic machine. So because we came up with $8 billion over the period of time, we partnered them with community colleges, 15-week degree. They brought in their machinery, their personnel, set up the course, and it set up a conveyor belt. Average salary, starting salary, $55,000 a year. As Ida mentioned, far too many women and minorities are underrepresented in the very fields that are growing. Women occupy less than a quarter of the science and technology, engineering, and math jobs like engineers and scientists right now. Women's share of computer science undergraduate degrees has declined from 37% in 1985 to 12% in 2013. African Americans and Latinos represent 26% of the workforce, yet they represent only 13% of the STEM workforce. That's why our 110 new commitments towards STEM education are critical. Increasing STEM graduate rates to 35% over — up to 35% over the next 5 to 10 years, producing thousands of more students that will help us reach the administration's goal of 1 million additional STEM graduates by 2022. Increasing mentoring, financial aid, tutoring, internships, women and minorities pursuing STEM fields, focusing on women and minorities. Moving away from traditional lecture-based courses to more active classrooms and encourage students to solve problems in small groups and hands-on experience at modeling. Perhaps more than 10,000 additional STEM teachers in K through 12 are needed. All this matters, but it's only a start. There's so much more to do and so much opportunity. There are 3,000 four-year colleges and universities in the United States of America. There are 1,700 two-year colleges. There are 13,000 school districts in America. We need to eventually reach all of them so many more promising students can meet their capacity and understand they possess the capacity, and so our country's economy can meet its full capacity. Because the one thing that distinguishes children raised in economically challenged circumstances from those from more privileged circumstances is not capacity. It is access and opportunity. So again, thank you all for helping us expand access, expand opportunity. Our children are not just our children. We talk about individual. They're all our children. And they're the kite strings that lift our national ambitions aloft. And so the more you can do, the more you burrow in, the better off we're all going to be. Thank you all so very much. I apologize for my passion. Thanks for what you're doing. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you. Thank you very much.